54. To Nikolai Nikolaevich Strahov. Dresden. March the 24th, April the 5th, 1870. I hasten, much esteemed Nikolai Nikolaevich, to answer your letter, and I shall come at once to myself. I want to tell you, decisively and frankly, that after the closest consideration, I cannot possibly promise to have the novel ready so soon as the autumn. It appears to me quite impracticable, and I should like to beg the staff not to press me, for I want to do my work quite as carefully and neatly as certain gentlemen, that is, the great ones, do theirs. All I will guarantee is that the novel shall be ready in the January of the coming year. This work is more to me than aught else. The idea is more precious to me than any of my other ideas, and I want to do it well. I also set great hopes on the novel which I am now writing for the Ruski Viestnik. I don't mean as a work of art, but because of its tendencies. I mean to utter certain thoughts, whether all the artistic side of it goes to the dogs or not. The thoughts that have gathered themselves together in my head and my heart are pressing me on. Even if it turns into a mere pamphlet, I shall say all that I have in my heart. I hope for success. For that matter, whoever sets himself to a task without so hoping? This work for the Ruski Viestnik I shall soon have finished, and then I can turn with gusto to the novel. I have been meditating the idea of this novel for 3 years. Till now, I have not been able to make up my mind to attack it in these foreign lands. I wanted not to begin till I was in Russia. But during these 3 years, the whole conception has matured within me, and I think that I can begin the first part, which I intend for the Saria, even here, for the action of that part is concerned with many years ago. You need not be uneasy when I speak of a first part. The idea demands great length, at least as great as in the Tolstoyan novels. It will really be a cycle of 5 distinct stories. These will be so independent of one another that any one of them, except the 2 that come midway, could perfectly well be published in different journals as completely separate works. The general title is to be The Life Story of a Great Sinner, and each separate tale will have its own title as well. Each division, that is, each single story, will be about 15 sheets at most in length. To write the second story, I must be in Russia. The action of that part takes place in a Russian monastery. Although I know the Russian monasteries well, I must nevertheless come back to Russia. I should like to have said much more about it to you, but what can one say in a letter? I repeat, however, that I can't possibly promise the novel for this year. Don't press me, and you will get a conscientious, perhaps even a really good work. At all events, I have set myself this idea as the goal of my literary future, for I can't at all hope to live and work more than 6 or 7 years longer. I have read the March number of the Saria with great enjoyment. I await impatiently the continuation of your article so that I may grasp it in its entirety. It seems to me that your point is to show Herzen as an Occidentalism, and in general to speak of the Occident in contradistinction to Russia. Am I right? You chose your point of departure very cleverly. Herzen is a pessimist. But do you really hold his doubts? Who is guilty? Krupov and the rest to be insoluble? It seems to me that you evade that question in order to give your fundamental idea more value. Anyhow, I await most eagerly the continuation of the article. The theme is positively too exciting and actual. What will come of it if you really adduce the proof that Herzen, earlier than many others, pointed to the decadence of the West? What will the Occidentalists of the Grunovsky period say to that? To be sure, I don't know if that is what you really are working up to. It is only a presentiment of mine. Don't you moreover think, although it has nothing to do with the theme of your article, that there is another standpoint from which to judge the character and activities of Herzen, namely that he ever and always was, first of all, a writer? The writer in him prevails ever and always in everything that he does. The agitator is a writer, the politician a writer, the socialist a writer, the philosopher to the last degree a writer. This peculiarity of his nature is, I think, explanatory of much in his work, even to his levity and his love of punning when he is treating the most serious moral and philosophical questions, which, by the by, is not a little repellent in him. He then speaks of Strahov's polemical articles, which Dostoevsky thinks too mild. The nihilists and occidentalists deserve the knout. You maintain, among other things, that Tolstoy is equal to any of our greatest writers. With that passage in your letter, I cannot possibly say that I agree. It is a thing that ought not to be affirmed. Pushkin and Lomonosov were geniuses. A writer who steps forward with the Negro of Peter the Great and Bielkin comes bringing a message of genius, a new message that nobody before him has anywhere whatever delivered. But when such a one comes with War and Peace, he comes after that new message which had been already delivered by Pushkin. And this stands fast. However far Tolstoy may go in the development of that message already delivered before him by another genius. I hold this to be very important, but I can't explain myself at all fully in these few lines.